Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to be the new leader of an organization that has been led by a leader for over 40 years? Well, as we pick up in the book of Joshua for the very first lesson in this book, that's exactly where we are with Joshua's life. Joshua is the new leader of the nation of Israel, and he will actually lead for longer than Moses did. Moses led for 40 years, but Joshua will lead even longer than that. And we will discover how long he lives later on in the study, not today, but another day. Now, the book of Joshua picks up in the exact location where the book of Deuteronomy ended, in what is called the Plain of Moab. So we have the Dead Sea, we have the Sea of Galilee, it was actually called the Kinnereth back then. We've got the Jordan River, and on this side where there's a mountainside, there's a little area right here that's a clearing, and it's called the Plain of Moab. And off to the far east side, before you hit the mountains, back away from the Jordan River, there's a place called Abel Shittim, and that's where the camp is sitting as we begin this study in the book of Joshua. Jericho is on the west side of the Jordan River. The distance between the two camps, or the camp and the city, is about 7 miles, and that's going to be important to us a little later. Well, at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we saw Joshua's commission as he was commissioned to be the new leader of the nation of Israel. And in the first words of this book, we see the beginning of Joshua's command with the Lord's great calling to Joshua as the new leader of the nation of Israel. And the record speaks of Joshua's guidance to the promised land by the Lord here in chapter 1 and in verse number 1. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Now the Lord did not call to Eleazar the high priest, neither did he call to the elders of the tribes. He called to Joshua. And it's for that reason that we're calling this Joshua's great calling. He told Joshua to get the people ready and cross over into the promised land. But we must ask the question, how long had they waited since the death of Moses? Now, at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we learned that the nation mourned the death of Moses for 30 days. In Joshua 3, chapters 3, verses 1 through 2, we will learn that upon this order to Joshua that we have here in verses 1 and 2, the camp will move from near the mountains in the plain of Moab at a place called Abel Shittim, or just Shittim, down by the river on the east side of on the bank, right by the River Jordan. It wasn't far, about 5 miles. There on the bank, they waited until the third day. And according to Joshua 4:19, the third day will be the 10th of Nisan. And that means that the order given in this great calling to Joshua occurred on the 7th of Nisan. So when we backdate 30 days from the calling here that happens, we will know the date of Moses' death. If that be the case, Moses died in the Jewish month of Adar on the 6th of the month. Now, if all was interpreted correctly, in Deuteronomy chapters 31 through 34, Moses died on his birthday at the age of 120 years old. That means Moses was born in Egypt on Adar the 6th. Now, the guidance of the Lord to Joshua is found in his words that say, "Now therefore, arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people." It's not a suggestion, it's a command. Arise, cross this Jordan. So, what the Lord does next in verse 3 is the Lord defines Joshua's boundaries in the promised land with a promise. Verse number 3. "Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun will be your territory." The promised land on the east side of the Jordan River, on the east side of the Jordan River already belonged to the nation of Israel. So these boundaries that we're speaking of are only on the west side of the Jordan River. The wilderness means the furthest southern boundary, which includes what is called the Negev Desert. The Negev held several areas. One is called the Wilderness of Zin. The other is called the Wilderness of Paran. And the northern boundary would be the southern border of the furthest going up of the country of Lebanon. It was to be even as far as the great river Euphrates, if they could get that far. The nation of Israel actually fell short of taking all the land on the west side that was proclaimed. So let me give you a little idea here. We have the Euphrates River coming up like this, and here is Lebanon, and they actually touch Lebanon, but then they only get about this much. They don't actually get up to the Euphrates River. They never control it all the way to the Euphrates River, but one day they will. It's still several hundred miles to the Euphrates River, and they just didn't get to it. Now, the passage says it will include all the land of the Hittite. And the land of the Hittite is right here in the middle area. And also, there's an area up here that's the land of the Hittites also. It's going to include both of those areas. They're going to get those lands. Now, the Hittite territory there in that middle was one of the strongest points. Now, the western boundary was the Great Sea towards the setting of the sun, as the Scripture says. And, of course, that's what we're talking about over here. This is what we call the Mediterranean Sea. That's what we know it as of today. All the boundaries were reached by Joshua except for reaching up to the Euphrates River. He just never quite made it that far. Now, in the great calling, the Lord proclaimed Joshua's protection in the promised land here in verse 5. "No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life, just as I have been with Moses. I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go." Note the term, the encouraging word from the Lord. And here's that encouraging word. That encouraging word says this: be strong and courageous. We have heard it twice in that verse. Two times we have just heard it. It's not the first time Joshua heard these words spoken to him. Moses spoke them to Joshua back in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 7. He said, "Be strong and courageous." At Joshua's commissioning service as the new leader, it was said to him in 31:32, "Be strong and courageous." Twice it is said there in that passage of our study in Deuteronomy. Twice it's said here so far. We will see it again in the following passage. Then again it will be said again in Joshua chapter 10, verse 25. But there was always a catch when the strong and courageous was said. The Lord said that Joshua would have success in the promised land, and the Lord would protect Joshua and the people under a condition. As long as they held to the law and did not vary away from it one degree. Well, the Lord states that the law is Joshua's guidance in the promised land, verse number 8. "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you?" Here we go again. "Be strong and courageous." That's number 6. "Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." The word meditate in the Hebrew is haga, and the root word of that means to ponder. And when it was first put into our first English Bible by Tyndale, the first Bible translated from Hebrew into English, it meant in 1525 to ponder, as to engage in mental contemplation. To ponder as to engage in mental contemplation. In other words, the Lord expected Joshua to read the only Bible he had every day. What did Joshua have as a Bible? Well, he had Moses' book of Genesis. He had the book of Exodus, which he helped complete, by the way. He had the book of Leviticus. He had the book of Numbers, which Joshua helped complete a few verses in it. And he had the book of Deuteronomy, which Joshua helped complete that book. He had inserted passages himself in the last four chapters of the Deuteronomy book. He knew the content of each. But the Lord did not want Joshua to forget these books. Forgetting the word of the Lord in the law of Leviticus and Deuteronomy especially would forfeit his success. And following the words of the Lord in the law would guarantee his success. The Lord said again to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." What could be a better calling than that? Well, from the great calling of Joshua, we come to the great command of Joshua. His first task was to prepare the tribes to move ahead, and we see that in verse 10. "Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, 'Pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves. For within three days, it says, you are to cross this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess it.'" The notice went out in the mouths of the officers, the text says here. "Prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you are going to cross this Jordan River." Joshua is specific. He does not say in 3 days, he says within 3 days. We know the day they crossed the Jordan River. Joshua tells the exact day in chapter 4:19. Here it is. We're reading ahead. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. Right here by the edge of Jericho, about the top of the two, is the little area that they're going to call Gilgal. It did not have that name until the Hebrew nation of Israel named it that. By the way, Abel Shittim did not have that name until the nation of Israel named it. It was just an open field and plain for them to plop down on and to camp at. Now, Jericho was the name of the town, and that's a Canaanite name, and it had already been set in place by them. If they crossed the river on Nisan the 10th, you got it here? Here's kind of my map. Now, remember, I want to talk to you about this. The top of this path, this is 6 o'clock right here. This line means 6 p.m. at night. That's the change of the day on the Hebrew calendar. We change at midnight. They changed at the time it came dark. So all the top has dark lines in it. That's dark, that's night. And all the bottom is the day, the daylight hour. So you see it's the sixth day until 6 p.m., then it becomes the seventh. It's the seventh day until 6 p.m. that becomes the eighth. It's the eighth day till 6 p.m. becomes the ninth. It is the ninth day until 6 p.m. becomes the 10th. And it's the 10th day until 6 p.m. becomes the 11th. And here in this passage, it says that they were going to cross it on the daylight hours of the 10th. That means that Joshua gave the command to prepare provisions back up 3 days. 1, 2, 3. On the seventh day, Joshua gave the commands. Here's why. The camp of Israel was currently near this mountain area over here on the east side of the plains of Moab in this little village area. This is going to be the place, I mean, they've formed the village area. It's not a town there yet. And this is the place where Balaam came and went around to three different mountains to be able to look at the vastness of how big this nation was. Now, Moab, that's the place where Balaam came to curse them. It is there that the Amorite king came to attack them, King Sihon, and they began war with them. And Sihon lost, if you remember. And they took his land that's right over here. They took that land. That land's going to go to Reuben and to Gad. The name of this place, Abel Shittim, means the meadow of acacia. We saw that word back in Exodus. Because the structures of all the tabernacle furniture, as well as the poles and beams and all of that, were made out of acacia wood before they were covered with gold, overlaid with gold. Now, the Hebrews gave that name to this area called the Meadow of Acacia. We translate it into English, it's Abel Shittim. The area was about 5 miles, as I said, through the plain of Moab to the bank of the Jordan River. It was good that it was there because it's good that they were, I should say, that they were camped there because the Jordan River in the spring will overflow its banks quite a distance. So they had to park, and as long as they were going to be there for the several months, they had to park their camp far enough away that the flooding would not come and overrun their camp. And so, in fact, by the way, the Nile overfloods on both sides in the springs. So in chapter 3, when we get there, we're going to learn that that camp moved from Abel Shittim on down to the bank of the river on the very next day, the day after the command to make provisions. They're going to move down there the next day. Then instructions were going to be given to cross on the third day. That is in Joshua chapter 3, verse 2. So we will study the crossing when we come to chapter 3 in that passage, and we'll talk about that then. So we must ask the question about the provisions for the camp that needed to be prepared. First, what provisions need to be prepared? Well, first, the people had to pack everything up that they had. Hey, the tabernacle had to come down and packed up. The complex had to be packed up. Everybody had to pack their tent. They had everything done. And they would not be unpacking it until they reached their camp on the other side of the Jordan River. So they will camp at that place that is going to be called Gilgal. And the name of that word Gilgal means rolling, because it's a good name because it's got some rolling hills that are there. And they decrease as they come down into the sandy area towards the bank of the Jordan River on the west side. They're going to call that place the Rolling. That's the name Gilgal. And the place of the camp will not have a name, just like Shittim did not, until the Hebrews gave it that name. Therefore, the camp knows that the camp that's moving down to the bank the next day, they don't know where they're headed across the Jordan River. They can't say we're going to Gilgal, because Gilgal doesn't exist yet until they show up on that side of Jericho and place their camp there. They did not know how long they were going to be packed up, but they had to pack everything up. So that meant, second, the provisions for cooking their food needed to be in place for those days. So not only are they hauling the stuff that's all packed up, they've got to keep some things out. And they did not have to store any food because they didn't have to store any food at all because the Lord was still feeding them manna these days. Although, I'm going to sneak up and tell you a little secret, that's going to end in about 8 days. The Lord's going to stop sending manna. Third, the men of 2.5 tribes needed to say their goodbyes to their wives and their children, as we will see next. So Joshua had a meeting with the tribes of Reuben, of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh to prepare the men of those tribes to leave their families behind. It was an agreement that those 2.5 tribes had made with Moses when Moses was still alive. They were there in the plains of Moab, and they wanted this Amorite land over here to be theirs, the land of King Sion and the land of King Og. And so Moses agreed, and we pick up in verse 12. To the Reubenites and the Gadites and to half the tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, "Remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, 'The Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan, but you shall cross over before your brothers in battle array, all your valiant warriors, and shall help them, until the Lord gives your brothers rest as He gives you, and they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to your own land and possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord God, gave you beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise to the east." So Moses had already divided the land of the Amorite kings, Sion and Gog, to the inheritance of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. All the Amorites were killed. However, their cities and their villages were not destroyed. Everything in those cities and villages was left fully furnished and ready for occupation. It was the fulfillment of Moses' words found over in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 10. "Then it shall come about, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which He swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied. For the families left behind, the women and the children, all they had to do was leave Abel Shittim and go up into the land and go inhabit those towns and cities, move right into their new homes. They're on the eastern side of the river." And I suppose they probably didn't do that right off the bat. I kind of imagine that the families went down to the Jordan to say goodbye to their men before they went over the Jordan, because they did not know how long their men were going to be gone before they would see them again. And so the women and the children would not know at all. And so we are in chapter 1 of this book. But Joshua will send the men home to be with their families not until chapter 22, we got 21 more chapters of information before they sends them home to be with their wives and children. And they will be gone a long time. Well, with the great calling of Joshua and the great command of Joshua, we come to the great promise to Joshua from all the people, verse 16. They answered Joshua saying, "All that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, we will also obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with us as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be," here's the word again, "words, strong and courageous." Well, Joshua was entirely in charge of the people, and they had pledged their loyalty to him and his leadership, just as they did to Moses. Now, thinking back on the people with Moses, the promise to Joshua may have not had as much credence. Moses's people were hit and miss with him, and I guarantee you they're going to be hit and miss with Joshua also, to some extent. Now, notice the promise the people make towards the rebels against Joshua. They say is, death is going to become to any rebels. And it will be only a few days into the future before the people will have the opportunity to fulfill this promise at least once. We're going to find out in chapter 7 of Joshua with a man by the name of Achan and his family. Yet, we must notice that the people ended their promise with the exact words spoken to Joshua by the Lord and Moses when they said, "Be strong and courageous." And for that, Joshua will do. He will be strong and he will be courageous.